Anna, it's possible the social services might decide to leave her at home and monitor them. I was silent, my thoughts whirling. I'm not saying that will be their decision, Jill said, but prepare yourself and the kids too. I'll phone you as soon as I hear. Jill was obviously still very busy and quickly winding up the conversation, she said goodbye. I replaced the handset and gazed through the open patio doors to the garden beyond. A small, brave bird was at the feeder, while our cat watched from beneath. If a child comes into care or has to move carers, then whenever possible, it is a planned move, with introductions and a visit to their new home first, so it's not completely strange when they move in. While Anna obviously knew her parents and was familiar with her house, she hadn't been there for nearly 6 months, and had only seen her father once in all that time. Also, the very reasons that had brought her into care in the first place were still ongoing. As far as I knew, the parents were no more prepared now for dealing with Anna than they had been before. In an ideal world, Anna would have spent time with her parents over the course of a few weeks, including overnight stays, leading up to a move home. During that period, they would all be getting to know each other again, with the benefit of therapy, and her parents would feel more confident in dealing with her. What would happen if she stayed at home now and it didn't work out? She'd come into care again, even more disturbed. I'd seen it happen. A child in and out of care, their behaviour deteriorating with each move. But social services budgets are tight, and foster placements are in short supply. Anna hadn't been abused or neglected, so any free carer would very likely be needed by a child who had been. While this wouldn't be an overriding factor, it would be a consideration. Thankfully, it wasn't my decision, so all I could do was wait and prepare myself and my children for the possibility that Anna might not be returning to us. I raised the matter with Adrian and Paula at dinner. The social workers are going to have a meeting soon, probably tomorrow, to decide where Anna should live. She lives here for now, Adrian said, puzzled. Anna's parents want her home and are working very hard to make that happen, so she might stay there.
And not come back at all?
Adrian asked, surprised.
Possibly. I don't know yet. But all her things are here, he said, looking worried.
Yes, I know. If they do decide she is staying there, I'll have to pack up all her belongings, then work out a way to get them to her.
Oh, Adrian said. So we don't get to say goodbye?
I don't know yet, love.
Doesn't Anna like us?
Paula asked.
Yes, of course, but her parents love her and want her home.
I changed the subject for fear of emotion getting the better of me. It was so difficult. This wasn't the way for a child we'd loved and cared for to leave. On Friday, I took Adrian and Paula to school and returned home, but couldn't settle to anything. Jill had said she'd phone as soon as she heard the outcome of the case conference, but hadn't known when that meeting would be, or even if it would definitely be today. I thought it was likely, as if the meeting didn't go ahead today, it wouldn't happen until Monday, as social services offices are closed at the weekend, and this wasn't a decision that could be left. Anna was supposed to be in foster care and officially living with me. If anything went wrong over the weekend, it would reflect badly on the social services as well as possibly putting Anna's safety in jeopardy. The day passed without any news, and at 3:15 I left to collect Adrian and Paula from school. When they came out, I could tell from their expressions that they were disappointed Anna wasn't with me. She'd always been in the playground to meet them, and despite all the aggravation she'd caused us, she'd been part of our lives for all this time, another sibling, so of course they missed her.
"I don't know what's happening yet," I said. "I'm still waiting to hear."
It was nearly 5 o'clock before I got the call, and I took it in the kitchen, where I was making dinner. Jill began with a big sigh.
The meeting went ahead this afternoon and hasn't long finished. They made the decision to allow Anna to stay with her parents, and the family will be monitored.
Oh.
Sorry, Kathy. I know it's not what either of us wanted to hear. The parents have given an undertaking that they will continue in family therapy and also take parenting classes. Laurie's manager raised concerns that the parents' actions have had a detrimental effect on Anna, but it was felt that to insist she return to you and then start a planned move home was likely to make her more unsettled and upset. Laurie is with the parents now, informing them of the decision. I was silent for a moment, taking it in. Well, I hope it all works out for them, I said in a flat voice. What about Anna's belongings? They're all still here. Laurie wants you to pack them up and then she'll arrange to have them collected. Okay, I said quietly. I raised the matter of you and the children having a chance to say goodbye to Anna, and Laurie will ask her parents. She also said that everyone at the meeting agreed you'd helped Anna and had helped to stabilize the situation, allowing the parents time to sort themselves out. Good, I said, without much feeling. I'm pleased I was of some help. So have a nice weekend, then. It will be a quiet one for you, Jill added, trying to lighten the mood. Yes, it will. And you. Take care. I'll be in touch next week. We said goodbye. I replaced the handset and then went slowly into the garden where Adrian and Paula were sitting in the shade of the tree, watching a line of ants. I squatted nearby. Jill just telephoned, I said. Anna won't be returning to live with us. The social workers have decided to leave her with her parents. Both children were quiet. Normally when a child returns home, it is good news, and we are pleased for them. But of course, now it was soured by the way it had been done. Usually I would have arranged a little leaving party and bought the child a farewell gift and card. I'd still buy the card and gift, but clearly there'd be no party. So we won't see Anna again? Adrian finally asked, looking up. Not unless her parents bring her to say goodbye, I replied, but I wasn't hopeful. Adrian isn't one to show his feelings, and he shrugged and concentrated on the ants again, as though it didn't matter. Paula said,
That's sad for us, but happy for Anna and her parents.
Yes, it is, I agreed. Having checked they were okay, I left them playing and returned indoors to make dinner. A little after 6 p.m, just as we'd finished eating, the phone rang. I answered in the kitchen while Adrian and Paula returned to the garden. I was slightly surprised to hear Laurie.
I'm with Anna and her parents now, she said. Ian would like to collect Anna's belongings tomorrow. She's hardly got anything here to wear.
And whose fault is that, I felt like saying. Her mother had packed all her belongings when she put her into care and then, without any warning, had removed her. But being professional, I said, All right, but I'll need time to pack, so can we make it in the afternoon?
What time? Laurie asked.
1 o'clock? I heard her repeat this, then she said,
Yes, that's okay. Ian will be with you around 1.
Will Anna be coming to say goodbye? I asked. Jill thought she might. I heard her relay this, but not the parents' reply. Laurie came on the line again.
Ian and Elaine will see how Anna feels in the morning,
which I had to accept, and the call ended. I went into the garden and told Adrian and Paula that Anna's father was coming to collect her belongings tomorrow afternoon, and that I was going up to her room now to start packing and to come and get me if they needed me. I could see them from Anna's bedroom window, and I worked for over an hour, packing her cases, bags and boxes. Then I spent some time with Adrian and Paula. Once they were in bed, I continued packing. I wanted to get as much done as possible tonight, because in the morning I planned to go into town to buy Anna a leaving gift and card. By 10 p.m. I'd cleared her bedroom, so all that remained were the bags and boxes of things she hadn't needed, and I'd stowed away. I'd take those downstairs tomorrow. Anna's room looked even more sorrowful and desolate now it was empty. With a final check that I hadn't missed anything, I came out and closed the door. Downstairs I made a much-needed mug of tea and took it into the living room, where I wrote up my log notes, ending with the arrangements for tomorrow. If Anna came with her father to say goodbye, then I'd add another entry. Otherwise, this would be the last. Closing my notes, I went to bed with a very heavy heart. I wasn't surprised the following afternoon at 1 when I answered the front door to find only Ian. No Anna.
No, she didn't feel up to it, he said awkwardly. Neither did Elaine.
I nodded. Come in.
We didn't get much sleep last night, he added. Anna was very unsettled.
No surprise there either, but I didn't comment.
It was difficult enough without making the situation worse. Adrian and Paula came into the hall from the living room, half expecting to see Anna, and I told them she'd stayed at home with her mother. They returned to the living room.
"Thanks for doing all this," Ian said, referring to all the bags and boxes stacked in the hall.
He picked up too, and I did likewise, and we began loading his car. Back and forth, the hall emptied and his car filled. There was just enough room. The boot, rear seat, and passenger seat were full. Last of all, I handed him the gift-wrapped box containing a girl's silver bracelet and the farewell card signed by us all. "A little something for Anna," I said. "Will you say goodbye to her from us, please?"
"Yes, of course." He looked embarrassed. "I suppose we should have bought you something, really."
"No need. Look after yourselves, and if ever you feel like getting in touch, do." He nodded stiffly and, saying goodbye, left. It was the most heartless ending I'd experienced in fostering. I didn't expect to hear from them again. Chapter 28 A Long Way From Home. Not only had we not had a chance to say goodbye to Anna, but I hadn't been able to say goodbye to Mrs. Taylor or Miss Rich. So the following week I telephoned the school and asked the secretary if she'd pass on my thanks to Anna's teacher and TA for all they had done for her while she'd been living with me. She said she would, and that Anna was in school, but that was all she said. Time passed. I didn't hear anything about Anna, but then I hadn't thought I would. When a child leaves a foster carer, there is no compulsion for the social services to give the carer updates, and it relies on the child's parents or guardians to keep in touch, which Elaine and Ian didn't do. I hadn't expected them to. They hadn't even brought Anna to say goodbye, so it was unlikely they'd make the effort to keep in touch. I just hoped Anna settled down and wasn't returned into care. The years went by. I continued fostering as a single parent and went on to adopt one of my foster children, Lucy. A big decision for us all, but definitely the right one. Then, one afternoon, 7 years after Anna had left, Jill telephoned.
"Do you remember a child called Anna Hudson?" she asked.
"Yes, of course. Why?" Foster carers never forget the children they've looked after.
"Her mother has been in touch with the social services. Anna would like to meet you."
I was dumbstruck, and it was a moment before I could reply. "Really?" I asked, amazed. "After all this time? I don't believe it." My eyes immediately filled. I'd had children I'd fostered before get in contact after a long time, but never in a million years had I expected to hear from Anna or her family.
"I don't believe it," I said again. "Gosh, she must be nearly 13 now."
"Yes, I believe so. Elaine told the social worker that she can remember where you live, but doesn't have your telephone number. She didn't like to just turn up at your door. Shall I tell the social services to let her have your number?"
"Yes, of course. I guess it must have all worked out for them."
"I assume so. Laurie, their social worker at the time, left a few years back, sometime after their case was closed. Doubtless Elaine will tell you all."
"Well, well, who would have thought it?" I mused. "Just shows what an impression I made."
Jill laughed.
"I thought you'd be pleased." "I am. You've made my day. I still can't believe it."
"Speak soon," Jill said, rounding off the call. For the rest of the day, I floated on cloud nine, immersed in a warm glow of happiness and treasured memories. For once a child leaves, I only remember the good times, not their negative behavior. I was so pleased that Anna had asked to see us, but also that Elaine had passed on her wishes and telephoned the social services. She might not have done. She could have discouraged Anna or told her it wasn't possible to contact me. But she'd done the decent thing and followed up on Anna's request. I wondered what had prompted Anna's interest in meeting me again. Possibly her age. She would be 13 soon, and young people often review and question their past as they enter their teenage years. I couldn't wait to meet her and hear all her news. Later, when my family returned home, I told Adrian, now aged 16, and Paula, 12, and they were as amazed and pleased as I was and remembered Anna clearly. The carer's children never forget their foster siblings either. I explained to Lucy, aged 14, who Anna was, and she was happy for us. Having spent a large part of her early life before she came to me, being moved between relatives and in and out of care, she appreciated the significance of Anna's wish to see us and the importance of good endings. It was nearly another week before Elaine rang, and I was starting to think that perhaps Anna had changed her mind. Then, one evening, after dinner, I answered the landline in the living room, and a small female voice said,
"Kathy, it's Elaine Hudson."
"Hello, Elaine. Lovely to hear from you."
"Thank you for agreeing to see Anna."
"No need to thank me. We're all overjoyed you got in touch."
"Are you?"
she said, as though it might not be true.
"After the way it all ended, I wondered if you'd want to see us."
Clearly she had reflected on this.
"It's history," I said.
"I'm delighted you've got in touch. I'm assuming everything worked out for you all."
"Yes, although there are still some ongoing issues we're working on, but I won't keep you now. Anna would like to see you. Ian and I would too."
"Great. When?"
"This weekend, if you're free."
"We're free Saturday. Afternoon would be good for us."
"Yes, that suits us too. Around 2 o'clock?
"Fine with me."
"You remember where we live?"
"Yes. We'll look forward to it then. Thank you, and thanks for all you did for Anna back then. I know it's a bit late."
"You're welcome. See you Saturday." I replaced the handset with a smile. Talk about a happy ending. Or was it? Elaine had said she was still dealing with some ongoing issues with Anna. I hoped they were solvable and that she wasn't coming to see if Anna could stay with me again. It might sound far-fetched, but I'd had experience of parents who knew I fostered stop me in the street, even knock on my door to ask if I could look after their child or children for a few weeks as they were struggling. I had to explain that the social care system didn't work like that, and if their family was in crisis, then they needed to phone the social services, who would send a social worker to assess them. If it was then decided their child or children needed to be in care, then the social services would place them with a foster carer, although not necessarily in the area. It would depend where a carer was free. Saturday afternoon. The house was spotless, and a freshly baked sponge cake filled with butter icing and jam stood majestically on a plate in the kitchen, ready to be sliced. I told Adrian, Paula and Lucy to just carry on as normal, although obviously Anna would want to see them as they did her. But at 2 o'clock, we were all sitting in the living room on our best behaviour and nervously awaiting Anna's arrival.
"I wonder if you'll recognise her," Lucy said. "It's a long time."
I agreed. The difference between a 5-year-old and a nearly 13-year-old would be dramatic. When the doorbell rang a little after 2 o'clock, I immediately left the living room to answer it, as nervous and curious as I was the first time I met Anna. Would I recognise her? Yes, I did, but only from her clear blue eyes. When I opened the door, before me stood a tall, fashionably dressed young lady with long fair hair loosely plaited over one shoulder, and she was smiling.
"Kathy, you haven't changed at all," she cried, clasping her hands together in delight.
"Well, thank you," I laughed. "Anyone who thinks I haven't changed in 7 years immediately wins a place in my heart." Elaine and Ian laughed too. It broke the ice. "Come on in, all of you." I automatically kissed Anna's cheek as I welcomed her, and she responded naturally and without hesitation by kissing mine. She wouldn't have done that 7 years ago, I mused. She shied away from physical affection. Elaine and I cheek-kissed, and then Ian presented me with a box of chocolates.
"A thank-you gift. Better late than never," he said, also kissing my cheek.
"Oh, that is kind of you," I said. "My favourites." "You've changed the colour on the walls," Anna said, glancing around the hall.
"Yes, a few years ago. Fancy you remembering that."
I'm constantly surprised by the details children remember years after they've left us.
"We're all in the living room," I said. "Come through. Adrian is going out shortly, but he wanted to see you first."
That's nice, Anna said pleasantly.
In the living room, I introduced them all to each other.
Lucy, Anna queried, looking puzzled. Kathy fostered me some years after you left and then adopted me, Lucy explained.
Wow, Anna said. I'm adopted too,
which Lucy knew.
You look like Kathy.
You look like your mum and dad, Lucy said.
She did. It's not imagination. Studies have shown that adopted children often grow to resemble their adoptive family in their likes and dislikes, aims, achievements, intelligence, and physical appearance. Any self-consciousness had now vanished as we settled into the chairs while the young people led the conversation.
Which school do you go to? Paula asked.
Anna named a secondary school close to where they lived. Then followed a chat about their secondary schools, the subjects they were choosing, or in Adrian's case had chosen, to study at higher level, what they liked to do in their spare time, and the careers they were thinking of. After a while, Adrian said he had to leave and stood.
Lovely meeting you again, he said to Anna.
And you? Sorry I broke your toys.
I'll get over it,
Adrian said dryly, which made everyone laugh. I went with him to the front door. I'll see you at dinner time then, unless you phone to say otherwise, I said. When Adrian had started going out with his friends, I'd put in place some ground rules so that I knew he was safe and that food didn't go to waste.
Yes, and save me a bit of that cake, Mum.
I will. After he'd gone, I returned to the living room and offered everyone a drink. Elaine asked for tea, Ian coffee, and the girls fruit juice.
I'll come and help you, Elaine said, standing.
I didn't really need her help, but I appreciated the chance to talk to Elaine in private, which I think is what she intended.
Anna is a real credit to you, I said, as soon as we were in the kitchen and out of earshot. I'm struggling to believe it's the same child. You and Ian have done a fantastic job.
Oh, thank you. Do you really see that much difference?
Absolutely. She's sociable, warm, engaging, tactile, makes conversation and smiles. When did all this happen?
It was a very long process, Elaine admitted, and we're still dealing with some issues.
Like what? I asked, pausing from taking the cups and saucers from the cupboard.
Mainly around control, Elaine replied. Anna still likes to be in charge. She'd run our lives if we let her. But now we understand more that it's a result of her early years' experience. We deal with it. We're having to be firmer now she's almost a teenager.
That's normal, I said. Most teenagers test the boundaries, but you're managing okay.
Oh, yes.
So I saw there'd been no need for me to worry. There wasn't an ulterior motive for their visit.
You've done very well, I said again and filled the kettle. We had help. We were in family therapy for over a year, and Anna saw a therapist separately. Ian and I went to parenting classes. Well, me mainly, as I was the main caregiver. We learned so much we wished we'd known sooner. We were incredibly naive. We thought our love for Anna would fix everything. It played a big part, of course, but as you know, we'd just been giving in to her and giving her everything she wanted, which wasn't what she needed. Our tutor said that what a child wants can be very different from what they need.
Very true, I said reflectively. Very true indeed.
That looks nice, Elaine said as I began to slice the cake.
Thank you. Let's hope it tastes as good as it looks.
I'm sure it will.
I also rejoined the online group for those who have adopted, Elaine continued. It helped talking to others going through something similar. I now share what we learned. I'll be honest with you, though. We had a very difficult time when Anna first returned from you. There were days when I thought I'd never be able to control her, but we got through it. We couldn't let her down again. Some of the strategies that you began here, our tutor mentioned at the parenting group, and the importance of consistent boundaries.
I nodded. I could see how confident Elaine was in her role as a parent now compared to before, and I was delighted that their family had come through the difficult times.
Anna would like to see her bedroom here, if that's okay, Elaine said. She might not like to ask.
Yes, of course, although it's a little different upstairs now. I added an extra bedroom so we could continue fostering after Lucy stayed.
So what prompted Anna to ask to visit us now?
We went back to the country where she was born last month and put a lot of old ghosts to rest.
It was after that.
She decided to put this old ghost to rest, I said, and Elaine laughed.
Did she see her birth mother?
No, she didn't want to try to find her, but we did visit the orphanage. It was dreadful. It closed a year after Anna left and is a ruin now, but the atmosphere lingers. A lot of the roof has fallen in, and ivy and weeds are growing inside, but those metal cots are still there, like empty cages. It sparked some very unpleasant memories in Anna, stuff she hadn't talked to us about before. She remembered children crying out for help at night and no one coming, being freezing cold in winter and hungry the whole time. She saw some sickly infants die in front of her. Possibly she saw Lana, I don't know. Elaine's eyes glistened. She remembers the callous attitude of the staff as we do. Thank goodness that doesn't happen now in the orphanages there. It was shocking to hear Anna talk about it, but it helped to put the past to rest once and for all. I nodded.
Will you return again?
No, not unless Anna wants to, and I don't think she will. She's moved on from the past. We all have.
Good, I smiled and picked up the tray containing the drinks while Elaine carried the plate with the cake. As we entered the living room, Elaine joked,
"Look what I just made!"
"No, you didn't,"
Anna snapped a little disparagingly.
"She might have done," Ian said, rising to his wife's defence. "Your mum makes very good cakes."
"She does,"
Anna agreed, duly chastened.
"So does our mum," Lucy said. "Just not enough of them."
I handed out the cake and drinks and we continued talking. The cake disappeared very quickly as Ian, Elaine and Anna had second slices, so I put the last slice in the kitchen for Adrian. It was soon 4 o'clock and Ian said they would need to leave shortly, as they were all going to the cinema later, so I asked Anna if she would like to look around the house now.
"Yes, please," she said.
Ian stayed in the living room talking to Lucy and Paula, while Elaine came with me.
"I've only ever seen your room in the photographs Kathy sent," Elaine said to Anna. "I always packed photographs of the child's stay when they left, so they had something to look back on."
Upstairs, I opened the door to what had been her bedroom, which now stood empty and ready for our next foster child.
"We had a child leave last week," I said. "I don't expect it'll stay empty for long."
"You've painted the walls and changed the carpet, but some of the furniture is the same," Anna said.
"Yes, you're right."
She went to the window and looked out to the garden beyond for a few seconds. When she turned, her face was sad, and her eyes glistened with tears.
"Whatever is the matter, love?" Elaine asked, going to her and putting her arm around her shoulders. "Can you tell me?"
"I was just thinking how horrible I was to everyone. You, Dad, Kathy and her family. But I couldn't help it. I couldn't put into words what I was feeling. So I lashed out. I remember my frustration and feeling very frightened. I knew I was a long way from home, but I couldn't work out how to get back."
Elaine's eyes filled too as she held her daughter, and I swallowed hard. Had I appreciated back then how frightened Anna had been? No. All I saw was an angry, out-of-control child. Perhaps if I'd asked the right questions, I would have discovered the frightened child within. I'll never know, but it was a lesson I learned and still remember. An angry child is a frightened child, crying out to be heard. This is one family's account of international adoption. International adoption has been practiced for many years and allows a child or children from one country, usually a developing country, to be adopted by a family in another country. The vast majority of these adoptions are very successful, with the child bonding with their new family. It should also be noted that attachment disorders can be found in children who haven't been adopted but fail to bond with their parents or primary caregiver for other reasons, usually through neglect or abuse. For the latest on Anna and the other children in my books, please visit www.kathyglass.co.uk. That was A Long Way From Home
by Kathy Glass. Read by Danica Fairman. This programme was produced by ID Audio. An audiobook from Harper Element, an imprint of HarperCollins. Text copyright 2018. Production copyright 2018 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Kathy Glass asserts the moral right to be identified as the author of this work. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this programme.